Hey, you're supposed to hit the white ball first, buddy.
Hey!
Ice one. Can I talk to you for a second?
Mm-hmm.
Everything okay?
Why are you wearing a hat now?
Guys, come on. I'm on a date. Let me do my thing.
Hi, I'm Date Mike. Nice to meet me. How do you like your eggs in the morning?
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you, back again after a few week hiatus. Before we get into everything, including the Week 17 quick recap, Giants offseason press conference, and what we expect the team to do going forward, and answer your questions, you know what we got to do. We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN, follow Weiss at NYG Daily, follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review. All right, Weiss, let's get into it. This is going to be more of a relaxed episode since it's been a few weeks since everything had ended. I'm sure we'll talk about some of the offseason hires. And it looks
one
like
of the
you
good things, yes. One of the good things is that if we would have recorded this immediately after the season and all the announcements that came down, we probably would have let a couple fly. But I think our emotions are back down.
Sure, yes.
We're level-headed. We're not as emotional. So it's, it's actually better that we waited a couple weeks.
Absolutely. You know what? You know, before this, I cooked up some nice lamb burgers. I crushed a fucking Peloton ride, just absolutely demolished it. And now I'm sitting here looking at your pretty face with a couple cold Coors Lights and no better way to spend the Tuesday evening.
Yes, sir.
So we can – where do you want to start?
Week 17. I mean, there was so much drama in Week 17.
All right, so we could do it quick because honestly, like at this point, it is what it is.
It is.
It's funny for Giants fans, just the way that everything turned out.
Right.
I think my immediate reaction was twofold, maybe three. So my bang thoughts after the game, outside of like, okay, fuck, the Giants aren't making the playoffs, even though I didn't really expect them to. Washington was, I think, at kickoff, a 6.5 or 7 point favorite. It was pretty well accepted that the Eagles had nothing to play for, and you know, some funky shit might happen. But one, if I'm an Eagles fan, I'm ecstatic. Personally, for me, if my team has nothing to play for, had gotten a pretty decent sample size at the person who we think may or may not be our franchise quarterback, Jalen Hurts. They got that later in the season. And going from, what was it, pick 9 to pick 6? Or 8, whatever it was. It was a three slot jump. I don't know the exact numbers. That is significant, especially inside the top 10, especially in a draft where you fully expect at least 3 quarterbacks to be going in the top 10 between Lawrence, Fields, and Zach Wilson. And even the fact that this is a stacked wide receiver class, too, between Waddle and Smith and Ja'Marr Chase, like you're going to have a lot of really good guys going top 10. It's never going to hurt you to get those 3 extra spots when you have nothing to gain. That's from a fan's perspective. I can understand why Giants fans are upset. I absolutely understand why Joe Judge was upset by it, not just for the playoff implications, but one thing that I think he had mentioned in his postseason presser that really struck home, and it's something that I personally didn't really think too much about, and I don't think a lot of other fans were thinking too much about, is the sacrifice that a lot of these coaches and players make, especially this season, on a week-to-week basis to be with their team and to be competing every week. I think he mentioned the running backs coach for the Giants, whose family is in Alabama, and he literally didn't see his family the entire season because he was committed to staying up in New York, staying with the Giants, reducing his travel, and staying COVID-free, not only for his safety, but also for the organizational structure of the Giants.
And there's a million examples of that this season.
Of course.
Players and coaches and trainers and all that.
Absolutely. So I totally... Really what this rant is devolving into is I can see all sides of this, right? As an Eagles fan, I'm absolutely thrilled that my team is getting those 3 extra moving up three spots in the draft order in what is widely going to be considered a very strong top 10 for multiple positions. I can see frustration from the Eagles fan base and especially the players who are there to compete week in and week out. Some guys, I'm sure, are competing for bonuses on their contract that come down to the wire week 17. A lot of guys who may be competing for roster spots next year, proving that they can go to another team and maybe get another contract if that's what it's coming down to. I can understand the players' frustration. What I don't understand is how Howie Roseman can sanction this, because Doug Peterson is not fucking tanking this game unless word comes down from Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman that if he does this, he is safe. Right?
Or he has to do this or he's fired.
Right, exactly. Or this is a mandate. Either way, it's coming from up top, and then for it to then come down that he is now fired, from a Giants fan's perspective, fucking hilarious, especially because it's widely considered that most of these top options for head coaching positions are off the market. I mean, they're interviewing Kellen Moore today. Like, yeah. That's comical to me. Josh McDaniels, who's forever been an offensive coordinator to the head coach, jump. He's, like, the number one name people are mentioning every offseason. Even he is, like, not even the front runner at this point.
He's not the same person as he was the last couple of coaching cycles. Yeah.
No. So, from a Giants fan's perspective, it's hilarious. Like, you sort of love to just watch your rival collapse, even if it is at the expense of three extra slots in the draft. But to see the head coach get fired and all the players pissed off and upset, it's fun to watch from a divisional perspective.
Yeah, and I think I agree overall with your saying. The one thing that I thought was very embarrassing was a lot of Giants players on Twitter that night, like, tweeting about the Eagles tanking, because I don't like, the Giants went 6-10. You know, like, they didn't deserve to make the playoffs. From the Eagles' side of it, it's weird because, well, now that we know that it seems like this was a owner/GM request to, hey, we're not trying to win this game, it's really odd that the GM would not want to see what Jalen Hurts can do, because a young quarterback put into a position where the other team is essentially playing a playoff game, where it's a playoff environment, quote unquote. Like, this is where you want to see what Jalen Hurts is made of. And I think if they would have kept Jalen Hurts in the game, they would have won that game.
I agree.
Because Alex Smith did not look like he could function. He didn't play the next week. You know, like, so it was surprising on that end. It all makes sense now why, you know, with Doug Peterson gone. But the Eagles, I think, are trending in that same direction that the Giants were in 2015, where you fire your head coach, but you keep your GM. Look, I'm not sitting here advocating that the Eagles needed to clean house, but it never made sense for them to fire one and keep the other, because it was a collaborative effort. If anything, the talent, or lack thereof, on the Eagles was huge. I mean, we saw Carson Wentz regress, but their draft, I mean, Jalen Reagor over Justin Jefferson. Then the year before, I mean, a couple years before that, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside over D.K. Metcalf. Just draft.
I may be misremembering this, but we spent like an entire episode shitting on the Patriots draft record.
Right.
I don't think the Eagles have drafted a Pro Bowler since Brandon Graham.
Right. So you look at that, and then on top of the fact how they held on to a lot of players and trades, the Golden Tate trade, you know, like, it didn't work out for them. They gave up a third-round pick. I get you were trying to win it. I understand that. But it didn't work out. He was never a fit. He didn't contribute enough. And just, you know, moves like that are the reason why the Eagles are where they are. But you're telling me only Doug Peterson is to blame? So,
and it came out afterwards that he was the one that got frustrated with Howie and Jeffrey Lurie telling him what to do.
And
which
as
is
a Super Bowl winning head coach, he has every right to be frustrated. Like, hey, yes, let me run this.
And it's something that we talk about all the time. It's John Mara and Dave Gettleman and all the meddling that goes on from the top down instead of just hiring football guys and letting them do their thing.
Right. I'm not saying Howie Roseman is Jerry Reese.
No.
Quite possibly could be better. But what when I look at the Eagles right now, I see a team that resembles those that giant team who took a glass half full approach, and it set them back even more. And seems like they're picking Carson Wentz over Doug Peterson. Okay, we'll see. But the Eagles are in a tough spot caps-wise. They don't know what Jalen Hurts is, and Carson Wentz is broken, and oh yeah, his contract. So as a Giant fan, I know I got my own issues to worry about, but yeah, it's sort of nice seeing another dysfunctional organization sort of show how dysfunctional they can be in our division. Because
yeah,
the Eagles are, to me, they are on the cusp of being a dumpster fire.
Right.
And this head coaching search is showing that.
Yeah. I mean, you said it, though. And this is a frustration that I have with a lot of the Giants fan base. And if this applies to you, listen up and listen good. Because what we just did just now, we made fun of the Eagles, but it was a fair and warranted assessment.
It was a criticism of the Eagles.
It was a criticism of the and a well-warranted criticism. It is one that is widely respected as being correct because of everything that we just saw transpire over the last, not even a few weeks, the entire season.
Right.
The Giants fan base, and I think it's a combination of a few things, primarily the Giants being as bad as they have been for the last few years, is that Giants fans don't have anything to celebrate. So they automatically turn to shitting on division rivals and other players, either on division rivals or not even on division rivals, because they have nothing themselves to cheer for.
They get enjoyment out of the
exactly.
other teams failing.
Exactly.
Those other teams are in a better situation or were in a better
Nail
situation
on the head.
Than the Giants.
Exactly. And that's why I can't go out there and make fun of Baker Mayfield, who just went 11-5 and won a playoff game when the Giants have fewer wins the last 3 years than Baker did in the last two or whatever it is. I can't make fun of that. Like,
no.
I can't make fun of the Cardinals for drafting Josh Rosen when they did so in 2018 and the Giants are in worse shape than they are today.
Yes.
I can't do that. I would rather focus and criticize my own team for the shit that they're getting wrong, the shit that they're obviously getting wrong, because other teams can figure it out. We can realize it and figure it out.
Right.
And other teams are doing very well. They're doing successfully. They were in similar, or if not the exact same position the Giants were a few years ago, and they're succeeding. I personally can't stand it. Unless like I have like a personal vendetta or like a reason to despise a specific player, DeSean Jackson is the perfect example. I fucking hate DeSean Jackson. I will never like him. I will never respect him. I will make fun of him at any step of the way because he personally hurt me as a Giants fan.
Right.
But someone like Baker Mayfield, who I was a fan of in college, isn't in the NFC East and may have said one negative thing about Daniel Jones over a year ago, even though he is now leading his team with a first-year head coach in a brand-new offense into the playoffs the same year the Giants were supposed to be rebuilding? Nah. Can't do it. The Eagles, what we just did, very valid criticism. But the Giants have so many problems in-house. Pardon me for not going out there and laughing at someone who may have said something negative about the Giants.
Yeah. I think with Baker,
I see it all the time on the timeline.
Yeah. I think a lot of Giants fans have a lot of animosity toward Baker Mayfield for what he said about Daniel Jones a couple of years ago. The issue with Baker is, for me, is I just don't think he's as good as people think, and that's just my opinion. But
I don't think people think he's that good.
There are a lot of people that
maybe Browns fans like. I don't think that Baker, when Baker came out,
yes.
I said on the podcast he was my favorite quarterback in that draft, and I believed at the time that he had the highest ceiling of any quarterback in the draft. Now, that's obviously not true.
Right.
I don't think
Buffalo.
Right. And I don't think that he is going to be a top five, maybe even top 10 quarterback in the league. But I think he's going to be very good. Maybe top 10 at his peak. But
maybe he'll have a couple years where he's a top 10 quarterback.
Sure.
I mean, I could see that. I mean, I just have my doubts. I mean, I don't want to sit here and evaluate Baker Mayfield, but I think what you're saying makes sense, is because Giant fans have sort of, like you said, they have, there's not a lot to root for the Giants. I mean, if I could go back and show you my emotions during that Seattle game and how ecstatic I was and how jumping up I was, you would have been like, dude, like, it ain't that serious, because I was plugged into that shit. Like, I was in it, right? Like, the emotions were high. I was jumping up and down. I was screaming. I was banging the walls. I mean, I was going all out. I was running around my house when they won, right? Because I haven't felt that in so long. Like, as a Giant fan, I haven't felt, like, I've seen great moments, but I haven't felt that taste of victory when going against a Seattle team that at the time was a Super Bowl contender and beating them with a backup quarterback. I have not felt something like that in so long that it came out. So I don't have a vendetta against the Giants. I'm a Giants fan. They just hurt me because they continue to do things that hurt themselves or do things that aren't smart. And so, you know, retaining a GM that I think doesn't deserve to be retained doesn't mean that I hate my team. It just means I hate the decisions that they're making. I will still root for the Giants next year.
Correct. But
I don't, my level of expectation has dropped significantly with them, and we can discuss that now.
Sure.
Obviously, the decision was made.
The decision was made.
Not just Dave Gettleman, but Jason Garrett as well. But we'll start with the GM, right? Because I think that's where that's not where this starts, but it's sort of like the owner. And I'm trying to keep my cool here because I don't want to be too emotional. Like, this is the reason why.
Let's take a deep breath, ready?
Yes.
In all through right. the nose.
Yeah.
Out through the mouth.
This is my opinion. Okay. John Mara doesn't care. Let me take that back. Winning is not the top priority for John Mara. Comfort is the top priority. John Mara likes people who tell him what he wants to hear. It's why, if you look at the Giants front office, there is multiple members of his family, not just Chris Mara. There was another individual too, who is a part of the Mara family. There's a reason why a lot of their front office members are people that were hired as scouts, interns, whatever, and worked their way up. There's a reason why this organization has not gone outside the realm of their comfort zone to hire people that can fix the Giants, because they need to be fixed. It is because this owner has to be comfortable. And because of that, the standards of the Giants have fallen. You with me?
All the way.
The standards have fallen. It's no longer about, hey, this is the Giants, this is, you know, one of the premier organizations in the NFL. There's a level of expectation. If you don't meet that expectation, you're gone. Remember, Tom Coughlin got fired after back-to-back 6-10 seasons, and he's one of the most important people in this organization's history. Rich history, too. And he was gone after 2 6-10 seasons. To me, standing in front of the camera and saying, well, we made some mistakes in 2018. You know, that's not enough. Where is the accountability? You tell your fan base to be patient. You've been telling them for the past 5 years, 3, 4, 5 years. You won't put a, we must win X amount of games, or we must go to the playoffs. You're just telling us to be patient. And there's a reason why he's able to get away with that. Number one, and I'm going to say this, John Mara has a lot of microphones in the media. And a lot of them are people that have been covering this team for a long time. And I'm not going to mention names, but you guys can figure out who. But he has a lot of people that sing his song for him every single year. It happens every single year. When it gets toward the end of the season, we start seeing these, you know, damage control articles and comments being put out there. And you know it when you look at it that, hey, I know who this is that's talking. This isn't that beat reporter. This is coming from the mouth of the owner or the GM or another person in the front office. Number two, John Mara, his team plays in a division, or excuse me, in a city where not only is there other dysfunction with other teams that play in the city of different sports, the Knicks, but the other football team that shares the stadium with them, their neighbor, is they're as big of a dumpster fire as the Giants, but they have more drama and they're able to take up a lot of that attention. You know, when you start, when a New York radio show starts, it usually starts with Jet drama. That's usually the topic of discussion.
It's very true.
Right? And third, and this is what we just talked about, is he plays in a division where all the other teams at one point in time, and you can, I guess you can say a lot of them still are.
Right now.
A dumpster fire. The NFC East winner this year won 7 games. The NFC East winner last year, I believe, won 8 games. So it's not like there's, you know, you're falling behind in your division, because you can win 7 games and, hey, you might win the division, right? So you put that all together, and that's why this team has been able to lower their standard, got away with a lot of what they've gotten away with, and they don't get talked about the same way Washington was being talked about, the same way the Jets get talked about, the same way the Knicks get talked about, because of their surrounding environment. And the fact that this owner, and this is where I give him credit for, right, has enough people in the media to sing his praises, to sing his song, and that's why the standards have been lowered and nobody's raising an eyebrow. Oh, they admitted, hey, I saw an article the other day or a week ago. Well, John Mara forgave Dave Gettleman for his 2018 mistake. Now it's time for everyone else to as well. Give me a break.
The reason the Giants are bad in 2020 is because of what they did in 2018.
Yep. It's, and if you think for a second, that they won't try to run another head coach out of town before they point the finger at the owner, you haven't been paying attention. Because I guarantee you that next year, if the Giants are in the same spot, before they point the finger at the owner or the GM, they will point it at the head coach. Mark my words.
I agree with that.
Because it will always be somebody else's fault.
I would agree with that. Outside of Gettleman, who we all hoped was fired but wasn't fired, I don't really have any thoughts on Gettleman. Like, everyone knows how we feel. Like, the evidence is out there that the guy is a terrible general manager.
It's no longer about Dave Gettleman to me. It's about the owner. Like,
But it's always been about the owner. Like, we've been saying the fish rots from the head down for, like,
right,
2 years at this point. Like, everyone knows that John Mara is a fucking idiot baby. Like, we had this discussion like a month and a half ago where we were like, okay, if the Giants don't make the playoffs, then it would make sense for John Mara to fire Dave Gettleman. And I said, yes, in a normal world, that is what would happen. But we are dealing with John Mara, who is a fucking idiot. So that is just like one thing that we can't control. John Mara is an idiot, and he's going to be in charge forever until someone convinces him that he is too dumb to run the day-to-day operations of this franchise.
There's no low. Like, there's like...
No.
Every time
low should have been 2018.
Right. It's going to keep getting lower and lower.
The one thing that you touched on a little bit, but it doesn't get talked about enough, it's not just how bad the division is, it's also, like, maybe I'm crazy here, but I think the Giants got, like, very lucky this season for a number of reasons. Like, look at the NFC East, okay? Dak Prescott was hurt for three quarters of the season.
Right.
Okay, they were starting fucking Andy Dalton and probably, I think, like, the 31st ranked defense in the league. That defense was awful. Horrendous. The Eagles, Carson Wentz, dumpster fire. They haven't drafted a Pro Bowler in forever. They fired the head coach at the end of the season. Absolute dysfunction.
They're a mess. They're a mess.
They were starting Jalen Hurts for the last part of the season. Washington football team made the playoffs. They started, what, four different starting quarterbacks throughout the course of the season?
Well, let's see.
Haskins, Smith, Allen, Heinicke.
Kyle Allen. Yeah, four.
They started four quarterbacks this season.
One
and still made the playoffs.
One who was literally, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but Alex Smith literally looked, and I'm not being disrespectful, but he looked handicapped.
Yes, I knew you were going to say that. He did.
I legit feared for that man.
Yes.
Many times. Because he did not look like he could walk.
Right.
But he was starting a quarterback for them for multiple games.
Yes. And when he was healthy, honestly, like, he was decent. I mean, you could do way worse. But the point is, and I'll admit, it's a little hypocritical of me to say this, because throughout the entire course of the season, when the Giants were losing close games, I said, I don't give a fuck. Find a way to win. Right?
Right.
And they did that in the later half of the season. But it's irresponsible to do your evaluation of the 2020 Giants without acknowledging how bad the division was. And I understand that you don't pick your opponents. The schedule is what the schedule is, and you're in the division that you're in. But you cannot look at how bad the other teams are. You're going to be playing six games against, right? That's like what might wind up being a third of their schedule in the next couple of years is terrible. Like, really bad football teams.
Yeah.
And you can't be measuring yourself against that. The bar has become the floor. And yeah. It can't be. So,
wait, while you were saying that, talking about the NFC East, the last 3 years, right? 10-6, 9-7, 7-9. Like, nobody won this division winning 11 games, 12 games, 13 games, 14
right.
games. Like, it's been shit for the better part of the last 3 years.
Right. It's not like the Giants went 9-7 and you're like, oh, shucks, it was a really tough division.
Yeah, no.
It's not the NFC West.
They literally were the Eagles not blatantly tanking a game away from winning the division at 6-10.
Yeah.
Like, it's been a dog shit. It's been a dog shit division, and the owner has been able to sort of use that to continue his level of comfort.
And that's exactly what I'm going at. As it pertains to Jason Garrett,
I don't get it.
I'm actually a little surprised. So, one, I forget if, whatever. We've had people tell us that Joe Judge is a very self-aware head coach. Like, Joe Judge, like, knows that his offense sucks. We've seen Joe Judge wield his power in firing the offensive line coach and bringing in Googe.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that Joe Judge did not wield his power. But we've also been told that Joe Judge was not given a say in the matter. That the decision to retain Jason, and this is like we're not source guys, right? We don't go out on Twitter and we say sourced, right? Okay.
But a very reliable person told us.
Yes.
That.
And we'll tell you guys in the podcast when we hear these things. I'll say with like 99% certainty because of who this person is, Joe Judge was not at all asked, right?
No.
This was like, we are retaining Jason Garrett, okay? And that leads me to this conspiracy, which really isn't a conspiracy. Jason Garrett receiving head coach interviews is fucking hilarious, not only because it's just totally not warranted, but because it is the perfect way for that snake John Mara to reason with the idiots who write him handwritten letters into retaining Jason Garrett, because he can then go out and say, oh, well, you know, it was a weird offseason and we didn't have a full camp, even though other offenses were working under the same circumstances.
I mean, it was a historically great offense, but who's keeping track, right?
Right, right. It was a historic year for offense in the NFL, and we're pretty sure we have the right guy, because if we didn't, he wouldn't be getting head coach interviews, right? That's the logic that's cranking inside John Mara's noodle upstairs, right?
He's a cheap car salesman.
Yes, he is. That he wants you to believe that because Jason Garrett is getting head coach interviews, that must mean that he is actually good and the Giants are doing something right. That is not the case. But
John Mara,
that's what he wants you to believe.
John Mara is pissing on his fan base.
Yes, and telling them
that it's rain. And has enough people that will say, yes, it is rain. It's not piss, even though it looks like piss and smells like piss.
Yes.
And for that, I give him credit, because you have enough people that, hey, look, I mean, look, I you got to give the guy credit for being able to, you know, control as many things as he can control.
Sure. Begrudgingly, sure. But, yeah.
State-run like media.
Yes, that's the perfect way to put it. So, yeah, are we surprised by any of this? No, because we at this point, we know who we're dealing with here.
Can I tell you guys something? My brother's a Ravens fan, right? Now, he follows the Giants because, you know, we talk about it all the time. And he just kept telling me, like, he's like, there's no way you guys are keeping Dave Gettleman, right? Like, it's like, no way. And he usually plays, like, devil's advocate. Like, he usually tells me, well, you know, even with the Saquon pick, he said, well, you know, you got Saquon, you know. When I told him, I said, hey, you know, that the Giants are keeping Dave Gettleman, his jaw literally dropped. And the next words out of his mouth were, the owner sucks. Like, you know, you got ownership problems.
Yeah.
And he's a Ravens fan, and, you know, they seem to be in it every year, you know, where the Giants are not in it every year. But look, at this point, like I said, to me, the anger is not even about Dave Gettleman anymore. Like, if the Giants do something dumb, it's no longer, oh my God, this GM sucks. No, it's like, oh my God, this owner. Like, when I get angry at the Giants, it's not, like, Dave Gettleman doesn't come to my mind anymore. Now it's John Mara. Like, that's where I am. That's where I am.
To me, it's still all of them. I fucking hate all of them.
Yeah, of course it's all of them. But, like, I know now that, you know, ownership, I need to direct my anger at ownership, because it's no longer about Dave Gettleman.
It's a little healthier that way.
Yeah, it is. It really is. So, look, I'm going to say this and people are going to be like, what? But I do think the Giants had their best offseason under Dave Gettleman, which is not, you know, it's not saying a lot, because the first two have been
completely
horrible.
Yeah, exactly. Again, like, the bar was so low, but yeah, I mean, you cannot argue that he had a good offseason. Like, Bradberry is a stud.
Right.
Right?
He's an all-pro corner.
He is an all-pro corner. Like, Blake Martinez was way better than anyone thought he would be. Even though he is fucking insufferable on social media, he was very good on the football field.
Right.
And the draft process they followed was, for the most part, sound. Whether or not they took the worst of the four offensive tackles is yet to be seen. But they were like, you know what, we're gonna try to build the right way.
Yeah, I think the draft, I think this will be 3-4 years down the road, we'll say, hey, the Giants found a lot of good contribution from this draft.
So we hope.
I'm not saying, yeah, that's where I think we'll be. But
yeah,
again, to me, it's about winning, right?
Yes.
You know, just because you admit you made a mistake, that doesn't mean you don't get to be held accountable. Well, you do, actually, with this team, but
so,
in my eyes, you don't.
So we spoke about bad ownership.
Yes.
Do you know where I'm pivoting?
Not the Mets.
Deshaun Watson.
Deshaun Watson.
Now, I know that you have thoughts on everything that's going on with Deshaun Watson.
Of course. And here's what I'll say. Let's stop thinking like a traditionalist when it comes to the NFL. I had this conversation with my dad, actually. He's a traditionalist when it comes to the football. Like, he's a guy, he's like a run the football guy. Like, yeah. Like, I'm serious.
Establish like the run, stop the run.
Yeah. He's like that, right? And he's like, oh, who does Deshaun Watson think he is? I said, look.
Yeah.
You are an NFL owner, right, of a franchise. Your biggest investment is your quarterback. It's not your head coach. It's not your GM. It's your quarterback. He's the guy that's making the most out of everyone else. No GM is making $40 million a year. Not even Bill Belichick. No head coach is making $40 million a year. But guess what? There are quarterbacks making $35, $40 million a year.
I love this, by the way. This is, I have never heard it pitched in this way. You're doing a very good job.
Yeah, like, I this is legit. Like, I don't understand how people don't see it this way. So if you're an NFL owner who has invested that much money into your quarterback or into one person.
Your biggest asset.
Right. He's your biggest asset. And, oh, by the way, so much of your success is determined by how he performs, right? Wouldn't you want him? I'm not saying Deshaun Watson should be asking the questions in the interview room, but if Deshaun Watson comes to you and say, hey, this is a guy who I've spoken to, another player who just so happens to be one of the best quarterbacks, best NFL players that has ever come around football in Patrick Mahomes. And he vouches for this guy. You know, I think we should look at him. We should extensively look at him. And you don't look at him? And I don't know what happened between the ownership and I read the Sports Illustrated report about Jack Easterby, whatever his name
Easterby,
is.
Easterby, I think, yeah.
Guy's a complete lunatic.
Yep.
I mean, just go read that SI article, by the way.
Who's the guy with the mega church? Joel Osteen? He's like the Joel Osteen of football.
Yeah, I mean, he is. I mean, that guy, I don't know how that dude has any say in roster decisions or football decisions, actually. But you would want your quarterback's input on a lot of things because you've invested much into him. A lot of the success of your organization, your company, is determined by him. I don't agree with a lot of things that Colin Cowherd says, but one of the best things he says is that your quarterback is your CEO, and that is the most accurate thing I've ever – the most accurate way to describe a quarterback. He is your CEO. And Deshaun comes to you, you have a conversation, right? And you tell him, hey, you're going to be a part of the process. We are going to consult with you. Again, nobody's saying that Deshaun Watson should be interviewing coaches, but you are going to be a part of the process. We will share our thoughts with you. We will take what you say into account. That is the right thing to do. You hire a firm. You pay them money. They lay out candidates. But then you don't even, you paid them to do the work. They do the work, and then you go away from it and hire a guy that they didn't recommend, and it's like, what the hell are you doing? And we're supposed to be mad at Deshaun Watson? I'm supposed to be. We talk about, it's about winning, right? Quarterbacks, they gotta win. Deshaun Watson wants to win. Part of the reason why he's angry is because they're not winning. If the name of the game is stats, then Deshaun Watson had one of the best statistical years of all quarterbacks in the league, but the team went 4-12. Right? If the name of the game is stats, then Deshaun Watson should be like, you know, I'm good. But no, Deshaun Watson wants to win. And when he sees an organization that like the Giants, for other reasons, have not made it a priority to win, then Deshaun Watson is like, listen, let me go somewhere else. I support Watson requesting a trade. I hope he does. And if you're asking me whether or not the Giants should inquire, there's about 25 teams in the NFL that I think should have a serious conversation about acquiring Deshaun Watson. And yes, the New York Giants are one of them.
Thank you. Thank you. You ended up right where I wanted you to end up.
Good.
And the New York Giants should absolutely... And again, this is like one of those things, right? Like, Week 17 happens, we sit down, both of us, in our heart of hearts, we know John Mara is not going to fire Dave Gettleman. The same way we know that they are not going to give up on Daniel Jones because they have faith in him for some reason, even though a quarterback like Deshaun Watson wants out. It doesn't make any sense. Like, people say you'd be giving up your future, your draft. No. Like, you're getting a friend, like a top 10, top maybe five. Top 5 quarterback for at least another, well, he's 25 right now. Say until
for
he's
at least
30,
10 years.
Maybe 10 years. Well, you don't know. But right. Without, like, injuries, safely 7 to 8 years. You don't have to worry about the quarterback position.
Right.
Okay? People like to talk about Daniel Jones' potential. They like to talk about, like, the potential of all these guys on the roster. Give me the sure thing 10 times out of 10. Most of the time when football fans talk about potential, it means we don't know for sure that he sucks yet.
Right.
Okay? You've seen what you've seen out of Daniel Jones. If you tell me you would rather wait and see if he develops instead of taking a shot on Deshaun Watson, you're a fucking idiot. I'm just going to say it. Right?
Yes.
And people say, oh, but like, look at the draft capital that we would have to give up. Okay, fine. Let's draft picks have way more value as picks before they become the player. Let me give you an example. You call up Nick Caserio in Houston. Hello, Mr. Caserio. You have a disgruntled quarterback who says he's going to refuse to play for you unless you trade him. Okay? Deshaun Watson's got the leverage because he's got the no-trade clause. I've got the leverage because I know at the end of the day he is not showing up for camp and he is not going to take another snap for your organization. I'm going to offer you Saquon Barkley. I'm going to offer you Dexter Lawrence. And I'm going to offer you Daniel Jones. What do you think he says? Running back off an ACL surgery, going into his third year, who he's going to have to give a massive contract to, a run-stuffing defensive tackle, and a quarterback that he isn't really sure whether or not they're going to pan out. What do you think Nick Caserio is going to say to that deal?
He will hang up the phone on you and laugh in your face.
Now, what is Nick Caserio going to say if Dave Gettleman calls him up and says, hey, I'll give you our 2021 first, our 2022 first, our 2023 first, and that's where we're going to start negotiations. What does Nick Caserio say?
He'll probably say, at the worst, hey, let me give you a call right back.
Let me see. Let me take a look at our draft charts. Let me take a look at your roster and where I think those first-round picks are going to wind up. And maybe I'll start to ask, oh, why don't you throw in a third here? Why don't you throw in Jabril Peppers? Why don't you throw in this extra piece? Yeah. The conversation
we really
is...
Like,
yes.
We really
the conversation,
like this linebacker you have.
Yep. Exactly. The conversation is much easier to have if you're talking draft picks before they become the players. Of
and
course.
You know what's funny?
You can hit on an Odell Beckham. You can hit on a Justin Jefferson.
Yep.
You can fucking hit on a Deshaun Watson, who a lot of people slept on in the draft. Absolutely. But most of the time, those picks are worth more as picks. And and the same group of fans, by the way, that tout Dave Gettleman's draft prowess and his ability to find talent late in drafts really don't think that this draft maestro is going to be able to find starting quality players 3 years in a row, rounds 2 through 7, with Deshaun Watson on the roster after the season that this defense just had with what we think Patrick Graham can be as defensive coordinator. You're telling me that Deshaun Watson is not worth at least 3 first-round picks because you want to take a chance on Daniel Jones? You are off your rocker. I know that there is a 0.001% chance that the Giants would even consider a trade for Deshaun Watson because they are a stupid franchise. That doesn't mean that is the correct decision. And it doesn't mean that Giants fans shouldn't even fantasize about that because it is the correct decision. Just because the ownership and the GM are inept doesn't mean that the fan base shouldn't think that that is the right thing to do.
Right. And you brought up an amazing point. You brought up the Giants' last 3 first-round picks. You know what's crazy?
Throw DeAndre Baker in there. Why not?
No, but you know what's crazy about that? Where were those picks before the picks were made, before those players were picked? Number 2 overall pick, number 6 overall pick, number 17 overall pick.
There you go.
With Deshaun Watson, and if he's healthy, you're not picking top 5.
No.
You're not picking top 10.
No.
You're picking between that 12, 11, 2, 32 range. It's a no-brainer decision. We talk about franchise quarterbacks. Deshaun Watson is a franchise quarterback.
And you know what?
And to me, if he is available, even the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who have a 43-year-old Tom Brady, have to look at that and say, I know I got Tom Brady, but man, I can have Deshaun Watson for the next 8 to 9 years, 10 years. Even they contemplate it. The only teams that probably don't contemplate it are Kansas City, Buffalo.
Yep.
Green Bay.
And maybe even Green Bay if this is Rodgers' last ride.
Maybe.
He's 37.
But every... Like I said...
The Seahawks?
There's only about... maybe they don't even contemplate it. But yeah, My point is he's such a great player that 80% of the league will take a step back... and say... Or 85% of the leagues take a step back and say, maybe we should consider. But I know. It's not going to happen.
No, and you know where he's
the only ones?
No, and you know where he's going to fucking wind up? You know where he's going to wind up? He's going to wind up on the Jets, and Allen Robinson is going to fucking sign with the Jets, and the Jets, who Giants fans love to make fun of for taking Sam Darnold in 2018, are going to turn it around faster because they make this trade.
I think he's going to Miami. If he doesn't stay in Houston,
it makes sense. The two teams that make the most sense, and everyone's been talking about it, it's Miami and it's the New York Jets.
I think Miami.
And Deshaun Watson loves the New York area, by the way. He was up here like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that, but that's pretty telling. But Miami, San Francisco, and I do believe the Jets will be in there. But I think, here's what I'll say. And I might just be sort of a prisoner of the way the NFL is. But I think the Texans will make it right by him.
And we're saying that. I mean, that's what happened with Russell Wilson. Although the level of disgruntledness, which isn't really a word, I don't think, is way higher with Watson. I mean, people were saying, like, oh, Russ might be on the block. Sierra likes it better in New York. Like, it was a contract dispute. Right.
Let's say Houston hires Eric Bieniemy, and Eric Bieniemy goes and he talks to Deshaun Watson, and he says, "Hey, look, you know, let's make this work." Like, I think Bieniemy.
Do you really think that an owner like Cal McNair is going to let his ego be? I don't know what the right word is, but for Deshaun Watson to have all the leverage after this is the same guy who said something about the prisoners running the asylum like a few weeks ago.
That was his dad.
Whatever. Yeah. Like, this is who we're talking about. This is the family that we're talking about right now, right?
They have a preacher running the organization.
I see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
I'm at the point where, like, every NFL insider is saying that this relationship is beyond repair. And even Deshaun is, like, on Twitter, like, not helping his case. Just saying, you know, liking tweets and saying, you know, please don't go to the parade, but not saying, please don't go to the parade because it's unnecessary. It's don't go to the parade because of COVID. Stuff like that. I see where you're coming from. I think that he is off this roster by week one.
If they interview Bieniemy, I think if, let's say they even offer him the job, I think before they do that, before they hire any coach, I think if I'm that candidate, I would reach out to Deshaun Watson first and be like, hey, Deshaun, like, the owner just offered me the job, but I want to talk to you first. Like, how? Like, what's going on? Like, I would get Deshaun's feelings first before I decide if I'm taking that job.
Sure. Yeah. But anyway, those are my feelings on the Deshaun Watson situation.
And I think we both agree.
What else is there?
I think that's
we didn't have anything else on the list.
We talk about the Giants off season.
Right. Sure. Yeah, this is a Giants podcast, right?
Right. It's crazy. The big free agent, I think, for them, the big situation for them heading into the offseason is Leonard Williams. I mean, the guy had just a career year.
Mm-hmm.
It was a career year. You're almost forced. Like, you have to pay him the money now.
You could let him walk.
You could, but...
They should.
You think they should let him walk?
They absolutely should. Bro, you're telling me that if the Giants went out there and they signed a free agent defensive tackle who had one good season and threw him like $20 million, you wouldn't be throwing a fucking fit, because I would.
Well, they might do that to Yannick Ngakoue.
Again, a guy that I probably am not in favor of bringing in, but that my point stands. Like, this is a guy who proved it once.
The thing is that
he's been Mr. Almost for like 5 seasons.
You have to look at, see, you could all, let's say they do let him walk and he goes to a team and he continues to have the career he's having. Then what?
I'm willing to take that risk based on 1 year of sample size and doing it in Patrick Graham's defense, which focuses a lot on secondary and coverage and allows those defensive linemen more time to get to the quarterback. Because think about it. He's been Mr. Almost his entire career.
Yeah, he was not Mr. Almost this year.
Yeah, but switch to Patrick Graham's defense. He's finally getting the sacks. I am not paying a defensive tackle that much money. I'm just not.
To me, I think...
I know you're like a USC Leo guy, and like
it's not,
out.
It's not. It's not even that. It's because this team, I mean, they cannot create more holes for themselves.
Understood. Like, but you know what? They need edge. They need like a,
they
like
do.
A fast. Like,
they do.
Yes.
But I think Leonard Williams. I think they can keep Leonard Williams. This is what I would do. I would franchise tag Leonard Williams again. And
okay.
I would have to. I would franchise him again. But because they're so cap-strapped, which is sort of a... I don't really believe in cap-strapped, but because you can bet...
Salary cap
ways
is
you can
a myth.
Sign.
It doesn't exist.
Yes, exactly. It's a farce,
it's like,
essentially.
It's like Wolf of Wall Street, Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah,
exactly. It's a fiction. It doesn't exist.
Right.
It's
Fugazi.
It's gone.
Fugazi.
Yeah, it's Fugazi.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go. Awesome movie, by the way. I think you keep him. He is a strength of your team. And I think you add an edge rusher as well. But the Giants really have to invest in edge rushers this offseason.
Yep.
Whether it's free agency, the draft, they have to find...
And it's not a good edge draft, honestly.
It's not. That's why they have to get creative somehow, some way, and how they can find edge rushers. Not how they generate a pass rush. You got to look at every... You cannot leave any stone unturned. Whether it's another team, another guy out there that could be on the block that you say, hey... I think I can get something out of this guy, but you got to find something that can get that can you know someone that can rush the passer because
yeah.
We know they lack that significantly. So I'm of the mindset that you tag him and then you got to work out a long term deal. You think just let him walk?
Yeah.
Dalvin Tomlinson.
Bring
him
back.
Letting
him
walk. Wow. I'm letting him walk.
Okay.
Here's why. You drafted Dexter Lawrence. You have B.J. Hill. I think you're going to pay Leonard Williams, so you let Dexter Lawrence walk.
That's where we differ. It's the Leo versus Dalvin.
I let him walk because Leonard Williams is a better pass rusher.
Okay. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that.
And I think if he's a better pass rusher...
It's just a difference in philosophy of how we want to build this defensive line.
I guess, but to me, if... Someone is a better pass rusher and he's worth maybe like $5-6 million a year more, I'm willing to do that. So those are the two big ones. Do you extend anybody?
Do I extend any? I mean who are the candidates?
Evan Ingram.
No.
No. Jabril Peppers.
Maybe.
You gotta consider that.
Yeah.
But the safety market is crazy after what happened last year. Will Hernandez is entering the final year of his deal, I think. Yeah.
Let him play it out.
Let him play it out. He's sort of been buried.
Disappointment since year one.
That's it.
That's really
it. We both agree that you got to part ways with Golden Tate.
Adios, muchacho. Yeah. Get the fuck out of here.
Kevin Zeitler.
It's tough, and you know why it's tough? It's like I've been saying yes all season, but
yes, me too.
Shane Lemieux has been downright awful in pass protection, and
right.
Will Hernandez has regressed tremendously. Like, I just don't see how you can give up a veteran presence like this, even if it frees up as much salary cap space as it would. Like,
yeah.
I want to. So badly I want to, but because neither of those two young guys have developed, I can't.
Yes, his cap number is $14.5 million, cutting him.
I mean, that would be such an asset to be able to let him go.
Yeah, I mean, his cap is $14 million, and then if you cut him, you save $12 million. Golden Tate, you save $6 million, so the Giants could essentially free up $18 million right there. How about Saquon Barkley? He has a cap hit of $10 million.
Let him play.
Coming off ACL, I'm not extending him.
No, you let him play. Yes. You're gonna fucking play on this contract.
Do you know what I think? And then the league should do like how, because there's a lot of great running backs out there. You know what I think? Like if you have a great running back and you're like, you know that he's an integral part of your team and you're contending, I wouldn't do long-term extensions. I would do short-term extensions, like a 3-year extension. Right?
Okay. But why is the player going to do that?
Well, if it becomes a pattern throughout the league.
I guess. I
mean, don't offer.
I mean, yeah, if I'm a team, absolutely I'm in favor of that.
You know, like, if Saquon was a free agent, let's say he didn't hurt himself and he had a good year, I wouldn't do a 5-year extension. I'll do a 3-year extension. Do shorter extensions. Nate Solder, $16 million cap hit. Cutting him would free up $6 million. So he's a $10 million dead cap hit.
Such a fucking, yeah, I don't know.
It's almost like they have to. They have to. Other than that, there's nobody else out there. Evan Ingram has a $6 million cap hit. And cutting, he has no dead money. So they can cut him and not have any dead money. They will get every penny onto their cap.
Then you let him play.
I mean, it's almost like you just have to let him play on the 5th-year option.
You have to. And then maybe you draft Pitts out of Florida.
We're going to have to talk about that one.
That's fine.
So that is...
And I think a lot of Giants fans are going to be disappointed about this this offseason.
You think so? A lot of them have this expectation that they're going to go out and get this...
Allen Robinson or Kenny Galladay? Like,
first of all, I don't think Kenny Galladay is an alpha wide receiver, number one. Allen Robinson, yes. But I think if I'm the Giants, I start reading into Curtis Samuel. I'm serious. It's
disgusting.
I actually don't think Curtis Samuel is a bad receiver. I think he could come in and have the same similar impact that James Bradbury had. I really do. I don't think he's a bad receiver.
Bro, he just had like his best season ever under Joe Brady, who's like an offensive evil genius,
and he's his numbers a very were talented like receiver.
800 yards and like 3 touchdowns. This guy in Jason Garrett's offense is going to be totally useless. That's the problem. If we had someone creative, I am in favor of bringing in anyone that you would consider as having that level of potential. With Jason Garrett, I'm like sort of hopeless. Like, you need that alpha.
I think
like Jason Garrett had Dez Bryant and he had Amari Cooper. Like, he had alphas.
I know the Giants fans have this mindset of Allen Robinson, Kenny Galladay.
It's not happening, guys.
I would put that very low. But if I'm a Giants fan, I start thinking about Curtis Samuel. And I start looking at wide receivers in the draft. Because I think that's where this is headed.
I mean, it's a great draft for receivers and playmakers.
If they spend money, I think you're looking at potentially re-signing Leonard Williams and possibly paying for an edge rusher. Yannick Ngakoue is a guy that comes to mind.
Okay.
I don't think they're going to spend big on the offensive line. I don't think they're going to spend big at corner. And I don't think they're going to spend big at receiver like many fans think. I think, to me, their money this offseason is going to be spent trying to keep Leonard Williams. And that's going to be a thing that's going to be going on all offseason and signing an edge. And the guy that comes to mind is Yannick Ngakoue.
Yep.
That's where I think we are.
By the way, guess who got suspended today?
Just now?
No, hours ago. It's not a big name.
Got suspended. NFL?
Yeah, Corey Coleman.
Oh, PEDs?
Yep. I think. Actually, it doesn't say. 6 games.
Okay. That seems like a
PED suspension. Performance-enhancing drug. You know who else got suspended for PEDs?
Golden Tate.
Yeah. You know who got arrested this offseason, this past offseason, although not not Giants, but former Giant?
DeAndre Baker.
Well, sure, but he had moved on from the Giants, played for another team, and then got arrested, but was on the Giants recently.
Moved on to another team, got arrested.
Cody Latimer.
Offense? Oh, yeah. Of course, yes.
So that's...
Washington's receiver, yes.
That's three wide receivers brought in by Dave Gettleman, post-Odell.
Funny how things work.
It is quite funny.
It is pretty funny.
Anyway, should we do some questions?
Yep. Well, a quick touch on the draft, and I know we'll spend a lot of time on the draft in the coming months, but I am not on board with Kyle Pitts.
I could be very on board.
I am not on board with that. I'm sorry. I am on board with praying that either Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith, or Ja'Marr Chase make it to 11.
I think there's a very good chance that one of them is there.
And I think it's going to be Jalen Waddle. And I'm okay with Jalen Waddle. I think Jalen Waddle is just as good as Devonta Smith.
They are very different. That's the problem, right?
I've
been a Jalen Waddle fan.
I love Jalen Waddle.
For like the last year and a half. Like, the guy is a walking explosive play.
Yes.
They got to let Dan Jones loose. They got to let him throw deep. Like, Jalen Waddle can be like that dude. I would love Jalen Waddle on the Giants.
And there's a clip of him that I saw, and I don't put too much stock in like straight running, but he is fast.
Bro, he's like Antonio Brown, like Deshaun Watson, Tyreek Hill type vibes. Like, that's like...
Right.
Like, he is that good.
He is a... I think he's going to be a great receiver. And I like Devonta Smith a lot, too. But... And this might be a hot take right now, but I'm pretty sure as we get closer to the draft, opinions will change. But I think Jalen Waddle is going to be a better receiver than Devonta Smith in the NFL.
It's possible. I mean, Devonta Smith reminds me of...
Well, it's Devonta Smith. I'm sorry.
Devonta Smith? Really? It's not Devonta?
Yeah. No, it's Devonta Smith, I think, because it ends with an A. Or Devonta.
I thought it was A. Whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah, he's a very good route runner. Like, very crisp, always opens, like, good at finding the soft spots of the zone.
I have two Alabama prospects that I really love.
Okay.
Jalen Waddle and Patrick Surtain.
Okay.
I love Patrick Surtain.
After Patrick Surtain, I've been reading it's not going to be a very good cornerback draft.
No.
So.
No. You got the guy from Virginia Tech. Forgot his name. He opted out. And he's sort of on my list, too. I don't have my list right now. And you got the guy Horn. I forgot what school he goes to. And then there's Patrick Surtain. And you know what's awesome? Is Joe Judge coached at Alabama. He has ties to Alabama.
Yep.
So in my mind, it makes me think, hey, they could definitely draft an Alabama player. And they could definitely draft the player that you love, Jalen Waddle.
I'm all for it.
I love Jalen Waddle. And people that say that playmakers are overrated and playmakers are not important, you haven't been watching football lately, buddy. You need playmakers. You need playmakers.
Yeah.
There's a reason why receivers are making $20 million a year now.
Yeah. All right, let's do some questions and wrap up. It's from Billy. Would you rather draft an edge and sign a receiver or sign an edge and draft a receiver? I think we
sign an edge, draft a receiver.
Correct. I think that's the only way to do it for this team. From Monty, if Jason Garrett is retained, that would what would you think of adding a passing game coordinator? I would be very pro adding a passing game coordinator. I just don't think it's going to do much.
I would be very pro adding anything pro offense, but I just not it's just not in the Giants' DNA, I think, to do that.
Yeah. From Mike, how confident are you that Daniel Jones will take a noticeable leap in year three?
Not confident.
Yeah,
at
not.
All.
Yeah, give it a percentage.
If they add a receiver, I would say 25%.
Yeah, I'm about the same.
If they don't add a receiver, 10%.
All right, this is a good one from Dan. In the spirit of playoffs, how many current Giants players would be worthy of starting on a Super Bowl caliber team?
Well, I think Kevin Zeitler.
Really? Okay.
One. Yeah, I think he would be starting. Graham Gano.
That was going to be my number one. Yep. I could see Sterling Shepard.
Leonard Williams, I think. Especially in Green Bay. He'll be awesome in Green Bay, by the way, with those two edge rushers. Dalvin Tomlinson, I could see start. Well, he's injured now, but obviously Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
Blake Martinez. Green Bay could use a linebacker like Blake Martinez. Yep.
yes, they could.
I want to say Nick Gates, but
probably not.
All those four teams are set at center. KC set, Buffalo set, Jensen, Green Bay. I think that's it. I mean, I can't think of anybody else that comes to mind. Oh, James Bradbury.
Yes. Obviously. Yeah, we forgot him. All right, let's do this last one from Rohan. Offensive MVP and defensive MVP and biggest surprise, biggest disappointment.
Oh, I'm going to do the defensive MVP to me.
Bradbury.
James Bradbury. He was locked down all year. Honorary mention is
Leonard Williams.
And Logan Ryan.
Okay.
Logan Ryan deserves some consideration too. He brought a lot to the table that doesn't show up on the stat sheet. Offensive MVP.
That's tough.
I'm going to say, you know what? Given the circumstance, I'm going to say Nick Gates.
I was thinking him too.
I'm going to say Nick Gates.
That's how bad things are in the offense. We're giving the MVP to a UDFA tackle who had to switch positions to center.
And that's the reason why. He was not a liability at all this season. He made the transition. He was an all right center. And I think he deserves offensive MVP consideration.
Sure.
I'm going to say Nick Gates. I want to say Sterling Shepard, but he was not around. I mean,
biggest surprise. Who's your biggest surprise?
Surprise, like disappointment or
good surprise?
Good surprise. Blake Martinez. I thought it was going to be a disaster signing, but he's been really good. He's been the best linebacker the Giants have had since
AP
Antonio Pierce. Yeah. Biggest disappointment?
Evan Engram for me.
To me, it's Daniel Jones.
Okay.
I thought I would see more. I just thought I would see more. To me, his year really, really bad.
Really bad.
Not all his fault, but there's enough there for me to say he was the biggest disappointment. I expected more.
Fair enough.
Excuse me for expecting more from the number six quarterback,
yeah.
For all you Daniel Jones apologists out there, sorry. Shouldn't have expected that much from a guy that we took with the number six pick. My bad.
Whoops. All right.
Sorry.
Should we wrap it up then? You got any final thoughts?
Yes. No, it was a good season.
I mean, not really.
I like doing this. Not really, but in terms of our podcast, I felt like we slipped a bit, but we got it going. The reason why we waited a couple weeks was not because of time, but because I wanted to lower my emotions toward this team.
And also because there was a revolt going on in your hometown.
Yeah, that too. We were actually supposed to record the day
people
went into the Capitol, but, you know. Hey,
whoops.
Sorry. Maybe not break into the Capitol and, you know, try to overthrow a government. But, hey, listen, that's for another day.
That is for another day.
It's a big day here in D.C. tomorrow, inauguration.
Or today, if you're listening.
Who you voted for. Yeah, yeah. Inauguration is always huge in my area, man. Well, in a normal time, like, I remember, regardless if it's a Republican or Democrat, like, D.C. is always a nice place to go. You always see people that you know.
I love D.C.
Inauguration's awesome, regardless who you vote for. Like, even in 2016, I know a lot of people, like, think that was different. No, I mean, it's fun. But unfortunately, this year, D.C. has...
For a number of reasons.
D.C. is basically Syria right now.
Downtown.
I'm serious. Like, you go to D.C., all you see is military. Like, it's Syria.
All right, let's wrap it up then. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. You can follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily, the blog at GothamSN. That's it for us now, and we will talk to you guys soon.
Peace.